Hello, everybody, and welcome to Lads on Tour. I'm one of your hosts, Stars of COVID, and I really need a proper first name. So please give me suggestions at some point in the future. And with me this evening, as always, are my two co-hosts, Brent Lee.
Yo, 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 yo.
Dr. Ivor Ivermectin.
Hey.
And our very special guest this evening is John Bai.
Hello. Nice to finally meet you all in person, so to speak.
And today's episode is going to be a bit different because by the end of today's episode, we're probably going to sound like conspiracy theorists because we're going to be delving into secret documents that they didn't want you to know about. And who are they? They are Hart. So John has spent a lot of time drilling into this. So first of all, John, tell us a little bit about yourself.
John Bai is actually my real name. I know not everyone believes that, but it's true.
Yeah, Stars of COVID is mine as well.
Yeah.
And Ivermectin is totally mine.
But Brent Lee isn't his. It's weird. Anyway, sorry, John.
I live in England. I, as you say, spent quite a lot of time looking into various disinformation groups over the last year or so. It's not what I do for a living. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a public health official or anything. I don't work for the 77th, contrary to rumors. I just do this in my spare time, basically, and just kind of got involved over the last couple of years during the pandemic.
Has everybody here been accused of being in the 77th?
Oh, yeah.
I say accused. I mean, it would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be nice if this, then I'd actually get paid for doing this.
Get paid for shitposting would be amazing.
I am the head of the 77th Sniper Division, is what I always say.
Brent, you've been accused as well, yeah?
Every day.
Every day.
Of something, of Nudge Unit, of 77th, of GCHQ, of In League with the Devil, of one of his minions, everything, mate.
Oh, yeah, I've had that. So, John, how did you get involved in the what I've called the counter COVID crank movement, the triple C movement?
Yeah, basically, I come from a background where I do a lot of data analysis and I have to learn different topics quite rapidly and become, you know, kind of an expert on them, essentially. You know, when the pandemic first started, there was a lot of talk about testing and testing figures and how the government was kind of cooking the books on the number of tests they were doing each day to hit their targets. And I basically got interested in analyzing the government data that was being released on testing. And that's kind of how I got involved in the whole thing in the first place. For example, when the government first started reporting the testing figures in more detail, I think it was July 2020, I was the first person to spot that the data actually showed that about two-thirds of the tests that the government had counted as being sent out had never actually been used. So when they were claiming they'd done 100,000 tests in a day at the end of April, that was a lie. And basically, you know, I did a lot of work looking through the data, understanding the data, going through all the data definitions, double-checking all my figures, checking my calculations, making sure all of the assumptions I'd made were correct. And sadly, a lot of people on Twitter weren't doing that. So as the pandemic kind of went on and we started seeing people like Michael Yeadon and Claire Craig and others starting to talk about false positives and pseudo-epidemics and stuff like that, I kind of had a familiarity with a lot of the data they were talking about, and I could tell pretty quickly that what they were saying was wrong, and a lot of the claims they were making were kind of nonsensical. I started replying to some of their posts on Twitter and just kind of poking holes in what they were saying and pointing out when they were making obvious mistakes or, you know, saying things that weren't true. And it just kind of progressed from there. And I ended up spending more and more time debunking disinformation online and less time actually analyzing the data. It proved to be a very useful background for kind of, understanding some of the things they were saying and where the data was coming from and what the data actually said as opposed to what they said that it said. Because obviously, in a lot of cases, what they were saying simply wasn't true. And it was quite easy to kind of find out where they'd gone wrong simply by reading the data definitions and understanding what was underlying the data. Sadly, a lot of these people don't do that. They find a piece of data, it seems to agree with something they believe, and they post it online without actually reading the text under the graph, which explains that, you know, why what they're saying is actually wrong.
Yeah. Confirmation bias is a hell of a drug, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, Jill, and I didn't realize that actually skepticism about, not about policy necessarily, but about how the government was presenting data and how the government was using data is actually what started you down this road. So far from the the accusation that is leveled that, oh, you just listen to whatever the government says, blah blah blah, it was the opposite of that brought you into this.
Yeah, I mean, kind of before HeartLeaks, the things I was best known for were, finding out that the government had basically been counting a bunch of tests that they put in the post that had ended up in a bin somewhere as having been conducted in some way. And then spotting that they'd basically completely failed to increase lab capacity over the summer of 2020, which is why everyone had so much difficulty trying to get tested when the kids went back to school in September. And the other thing that I was doing a lot of was just analyzing the weekly test and trace reports, and again, kind of pointing out where all of the delays were in the system and where tests were going missing, and basically all of the issues that were happening around that, which were causing a lot of problems where, you know, you thought you might have COVID, you go and get a test. If you were lucky, you managed to book a test. If you were really lucky, you might get the test result back in 2 or 3 days. Then the contact tracers would take another day or two to get in touch with you. Then they'd take a couple more days to get in touch with all of the people you were in contact with. And by that point, everyone had already got COVID and passed it on to someone else, which kind of made the whole exercise kind of pointless. That was kind of a background that I came from. But then, like I say, I got more and more involved in kind of debunking some of the obviously false information that was going around online from other people who were, in some cases, looking at the same data I was and just completely misunderstanding it.
So that's sort of like a paradox in a way, because these people like Yeadon, Craig, etc., they sell themselves as like the real skeptics of the data, but their claims are just completely wrong. The government was like under testing by what you're saying and lying about how many they were doing, not deliberately doing loads to get a massive number. So it's the exact opposite of what was being claimed.
Yeah, I think, obviously, once we got into 2021, the system was in a much better state. There was, plenty of lab capacity and the contact tracing was a bit more routine. But certainly in the first year of the pandemic, there was a lot of times when it was really quite chaotic. And I remember there was, I think it was a Times story about how people were kind of adding up numbers on paper to figure out how many tests had been done each day and how many cases were and stuff like that, because there was no central system for processing all of this data. Thankfully, we're in a much better position now. And, obviously the guys behind the government dashboard, for example, did a fantastic job on just exposing a vast amount of data in huge detail on, everything from how many tests were being conducted to how many cases there were to, how many people were ending up in hospital or sadly dying. And just for the quantity and quality of the data that we were getting got a lot better as time went by. Obviously people were then digging into that data and not necessarily understanding what it was saying. Because I'd spent a lot of time looking at that data myself, I could often understand kind of, where the errors or misrepresentations, as it were in what they were saying.
I agree with you a lot about the dashboard. The data there is really good. And I haven't even dug into the stuff that you can pull out, via the APIs and so on. But there's a ton of really good stuff there. People have done an amazing job. So let's get on to Heart. Who even are Heart?
So yeah, Heart are one of the big kind of COVID skeptic groups in the UK. They started up right at the beginning of 2021. The founders, Anna Rayner and Reese Bernard, were literally jumping into their chat room as clock struck midnight on New Year's Day 2021. I guess they didn't have anything better to do. And they just kind of gathered a lot of people like Michael Yeadon, Claire Craig, Norman Fenton, and a bunch of kind of varying levels from outright cranks like Anna Reina herself, who's a homeopath who claims to treat autism supposedly caused by vaccines, to at the other end of the scale, relatively respectable scientists and academics who've somehow ended up in this group full of cranks. You've got people like Carol Sikora, for example, who actually left one group, Panda, because of something they said about vaccines, and joined Heart, who has said even worse things about vaccines and bafflingly is still a member of the group. Yeah, it's quite a mixed bag. Obviously, in public, they claim to be this, you know, group of respectful scientists and academics and medics and so on who are just kind of, you know, countering the narrative and, you know, offering the other side of the argument or whatever. But in private, a lot of the things that they were saying were just absolutely crazy. So, you know, that's one of the kind of main learnings that we've got from the Heart Leaks, is just kind of what these people have been saying in private versus what they've been saying in public. And obviously, you know, as time has gone by, they've become more and more outspoken in public, and they're now kind of openly claiming that, you know, vaccines are causing vast amounts of harm and, you know, all of these other things that they'd previously kept under wraps because they didn't want to get called anti-vax. Obviously, the cat's out of the bag on that now.
You mentioned Panda in your answer there. What are these people linked to other organizations?
Oh, yes. So it's a real rat's nest.
It's a huge conspiracy.
It is. I feel kind of like that famous meme of the guy, you know, with the big board full of interlocking strings and photos pointing at things going, yeah, that's just kind of reality with these guys, bizarrely enough. So yeah, there are just a ridiculous number of groups, you know, even just in the UK, but also in other countries as well that they have links to. And there's a lot of kind of shared membership between different groups. So, you know, obviously you've got Us For Them, for example, who claim to be a parents group, but have suspiciously good ties to, you know, conservative backbenchers and the people who fund and provide PR for them. They've campaigned against basically anything that would stop children from catching COVID in school, from, you know, school closures. You can kind of understand no one wants schools closed in an ideal world, but at the same time, they're complaining about testing, masks, vaccines, even having the windows open, basically anything that might stop kids from catching COVID, they don't seem to like for some reason.
I can remember being in school after lunchtime whenever we played football, and that room needed ventilation, COVID or no COVID.
Yep. You know, so for example, Roz Jones used to be listed as a member of their senior leadership team. She's also a prominent member of Heart. She's also involved in Children's COVID Vaccine Advisory Council, which is kind of a Heart spin-off organization, and various other campaigns. Molly Kingsley, who's one of the co-founders of Us For Them, was also at one point on the Heart chat group. I don't think she's ever officially been a member of the group. She's certainly never been listed as a member, but she's certainly got close connections with them and has interacted with them on their chat server.
And it is on Together's advisory board, or certainly was.
Yes, which I think, interestingly, she now denies, even though people have screenshots of her website when it listed her as being a member.
I can tell you better than that. I will. So this is the bit that I can plug. If you go to starsofcovid.github.io and you do a search for people for Molly Kingsley, you will be taken directly to the page of Molly Kingsley on it and the other people who she was on the Together board. And you can click right through to the archive.org screenshot. So that is starsofcovid.github.io. Now, to be fair, there are things which John has mentioned which I need to go and try to add to it. But it's a worthwhile resource. It's not often I get to plug something. Sorry, John. Always be closing.
By COVID-19 Ultimate Misinformation Multiple Dead Horses Edition in December.
Brilliant. I wish I had something to plug now. Sadly, all I have to plug is my Twitter account, which you can find as John Bai on Twitter. Very imaginative. So yeah, other groups, you know, you've got Bird, who are one of the groups that pushes ivermectin in the UK. Tess Laurie is involved with them. She's also a member of Heart. Edmund Fordham, another Heart member, was working with Bird as well. And various other people have also been involved with them. You've got the, is it Smile Free campaign, which is Gary Sidley. He's a Heart member. What else have we got here? So the Children's COVID Vaccine Advisory Council, I've already mentioned. They had a open letter that they published and delivered to the JCVI. The people who delivered that letter to the JCVI were Ros Jones, who we've already talked about, and Anna Rayner, who we've also talked about. She was the co-founder of Heart. She's also obviously very involved with this other spin-off group. Various members of the group are involved with Children's Health Defense, which is a notorious US anti-vax group that's been around for years. Liz Evans, who's a Heart member, is on their EU branch. Michael Yeadon spoke one of their conferences in Sweden about digital tyranny. Ros Jones is an advisor to their new UK branch. Again, she's also been involved with us for them in the past. So, you know, they keep complaining about people saying they have links to anti-vaxxers. Well, here's one of their former leaders who's now an advisor to a, you know, well-known international anti-vax group. What else have we got? Collateral Global, some of Heart's members moved to Collateral Global after Heart kind of got exposed as a bunch of cranks, because Collateral Global, on the face of it, at least, are somewhat more respectable. But then we also know now, thanks to Heart leaks, that, for example, Sunetra Gupta and other members of Collateral Global were actually helping Heart recruit members when they first started up. And we're also in regular contact with Michael Yeadon in early 2021 as well.
Apart from that, no problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So the COVID-19 assembly involves a variety of people, including Toby Young, who runs Daily Skeptics, Martin Kulldorff, who's one of the guys from the Great Barrington Declaration. They came up with this idea of doing a death audit, where they would basically go through all of the COVID deaths in the UK and basically make sure that they were actually caused by COVID. Because obviously, you know, Claire Craig in particular was going around saying a lot of these deaths were, being misdiagnosed, and they were actually dying of other things than just being labeled as COVID because either false positive tests or because they just happened to have COVID at the time they died, but it didn't actually kill them.
Tell me this, have you found, and maybe we should put this to them, but have you found any evidence that COVID-19 Assembly has completed even one death audit at any point?
None whatsoever. There is absolutely no information about it on their website except for the page announcing its start, which basically they got Claire Craig to be the figurehead for it. She did this appeal video where she, you know, said, hey, we're going to go audit every death and check whether it was actually COVID. Meanwhile, in the Heart chat, she was privately admitting to other people that there was no way they could possibly do this, but they had to sound serious. Presumably, they had to sound serious so they could raise the funds to not do it, essentially. So it's very dodgy.
So you did find evidence that they raised money?
They had a crowdfunding page for it. I'm not sure exactly how much money they raised from this particular campaign, but I have no idea where that money went to.
It's still active, even though the company has now defunct, yeah.
It's still active.
Hi, everyone. This is post-production Stars of COVID. I bet you didn't think I existed, nor did I. But on the 10th of September, COVID-19 Assembly put out a couple of tweets which are relevant to the discussion about whether or not they have dissolved. So I will read them out. Notice: COVID-19 Assembly has been a trading name of Global Crisis Research Limited since early July 2021. It is a non-profit company limited by guarantee. When COVID-19 Assembly was launched in November 2020, we accidentally registered it as a company limited by shares. Next tweet: but the company documents were written to show it was a non-profit. In July 2021, we decided to do it properly and let the original company dissolve. Some people have seen that the original company dissolve, yet never checked to see that we were actually using a new company name. Every person who made a donation to COVID-19 Assembly received at least one email from us at the end of 2021, giving a full update on what we had been doing for the year. Thanks for all your support over the last 2 years. Now, I'm recording this on the 12th of September at 18:52. And I went to Company House and I've had a look, and there is a company called Global Crisis Research Limited. They filed an incorporation document on the 15th of July 2021, and a confirmation statement on the 1st of August 2022. What they have not filed at any point, and to be fair, I don't know enough about these things to know if they should have done by now, there are still no accounts. So, look, you can take from that all you wish, but obviously we need to make sure the podcast is as accurate as possible, and so we're doing post-production now. Anyway, back to the show.
Yeah, so they occasionally, they've had a couple of posts on Twitter recently, just to kind of keep things ticking over, but they seem to be essentially dead now, and yeah, Companies House has dissolved the company. They've never submitted any records, any kind of accounts for the time they were active, so we have no idea how much money they raised or where it went to or who was responsible. That money just vanished into a black hole. They were also involved in one of the legal cases against vaccinating children. I think it was one for 11 to 15-year-olds. That was kicked out of court as completely without merit. And again, we have no idea how much of the money they raised for that court case actually got spent on it. But yeah, it's just kind of vanished now.
So if you're a journalist, and it's unlikely that we have managed, maybe we do, if you're a journalist and you're listening to this tonight, you need to investigate this. Okay, so let's get background to the heart. Although I feel like we could talk about COVID-19 assembly for weeks, and if they've behaved as I think they've behaved, and I'm not sure, but if they've behaved as I think they've behaved, it's absolutely disgusting. Right, anyway, back to Hart. What was Hart's aims? How did they describe themselves whenever they got started?
Yeah, so when they first started up, basically their idea was that they were going to influence politicians and basically work with COVID skeptics, particularly on the conservative backbenches, but they were also trying to find MPs from other parties as well that might be interested and give them information to basically help push back against the public health measures that the government was taking. And they didn't want to be a public-facing organization. They were more interested in influencing things behind the scenes. And in fact, it's quite interesting. There's like a huge argument that goes on for weeks after the group starts up between various members about, like, you know, how much they should be saying in public and, you know, whether this strategy is actually working or not. And again, obviously, as time has gone on, they've kind of moved away from that into more direct appeals to the public and releasing videos and articles online and stuff like that. But certainly initially their goal was more to try and influence politicians. And sadly they do seem to have had some success in that area.
I did find the discussion around the TikTok video to discourage children from being vaccinated one of the cringiest things I've ever read.
Yeah, that was just kind of creepy. They had this bizarre idea they were going to create some kind of TikTok rap video which would convince children that it was cool not to get vaccinated against COVID. I don't think this ever actually happened, thankfully, although honestly, I would like to see that video because I think it would just be absolutely hilariously cringeworthy. But yeah, it's one of those crazy ideas they came up with. And ironically, it was one of their psychologists who came up with this idea. And, you know, their psychologist members are always complaining about the government nudge units and stuff like that. And here they are trying to come up with ideas for how they can convince children, but it's cool not to get vaccinated. Yeah, it's real double standards.
I nearly died of cringe. I mean, it was, apologies if there are any tankies listening this evening, it was approaching tanky level of cringe. It was unbelievable. One of the things then, right at the start, I can remember that before Hart, there was an organization called PCR Claims, and which, again, we had some of the same people involved. We had Yeadon, we had Craig, we had Nerys Bernard. And their aim was to encourage sort of a group legal challenge to people who had suffered as a result of, as they would put it, positive PCR tests.
Yeah, it was weird. It was kind of like a reverse ambulance chasing campaign. It's like, you know, rather than finding sick people, it's like finding people who weren't sick but got a positive COVID test and then trying to sue the government because they'd, you know, somehow lost out on something. I don't think they had any particular success with that. I don't think a single legal case actually got launched. I don't know if they got any, you know, how many people actually got in contact with them about that or whether they raised any funds. But again, they don't seem to have had much success with that.
Yeah, I can remember whenever Lewis Hamilton got COVID at the, I guess, towards the end of 2020. So he wasn't able to make the last one or two races. And they tweeted him that his test was a joke.
Yeah.
A few weeks later, he tweeted that it was the worst event of his life, getting COVID. Let's be serious, right? Not any of the four of us could complete a Grand Prix, long COVID or no long COVID. So he's still finishing Grand Prix, but he was visibly absolutely destroyed afterwards. He had a very bad time of it.
I know it was actually at the British Grand Prix in 2021, and I remember that, you know, he was struggling to stand up on the podium at the end of the race. I think that was when he kind of revealed that he had been suffering from long COVID. And this was obviously several months after he'd had it. So yeah, the idea that it was a false positive test is kind of ridiculous. I'm a big Formula One fan, and these guys are some of the fittest athletes in the world. You know, they drive around at a ridiculous speed for, you know, up to 2 hours in sometimes incredibly hot, humid conditions, and pulling ridiculous G-forces through the corners. And the fact that he was, you know, obviously seriously struggling several months after having COVID, it shows that, you know, anyone can be affected by this, even if it's a relatively mild case first time around. You know, you can still be suffering the after effects from it for months afterwards.
Yeah, and it also shows that you shouldn't diagnose people over Twitter based on zero information.
What else is Twitter for?
Well, I mean, that's what podcasts are for, except that genuinely everything John's saying is right.
Yeah.
You know, it's remarkable these people. Every time anybody's sick or dies, it's inevitably caused by, you know, COVID vaccines. You know, they're just completely obsessed. It's like, you know, was it DMX, I think, for rapper?
DMX, yeah.
I'm surprised they haven't started today.
Yeah, with the Queen, yeah.
Yeah, we should contextualize that, because that'll age poorly. About 90 minutes ago, it was announced that Her Majesty the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, passed away. So I guess God save the king. Unless you're listening to this a long way into the future, in this case, who knows?
If you're listening in like 2050, based.
So how, I do always sound like a police officer, how long have you had the stuff? How long have you had this material, Mr. Bai?
So it was just over a year ago that the story first broke. I think it was in July 2021. When the first stories came out, and it was literally days after that that I was given access to the all of the log files by someone else who I won't name, and basically I immediately started going through all of these files. At first, I was just kind of searching for particular search terms just to find stuff that stood out, but then obviously one of the problems is that the log files don't have like all of the threading and stuff, so it's quite hard to tell exactly what's going on at any particular point. So I basically just went through their entire, you know, like 7 months worth of leaked chat files from a group of dozens of people who were just constantly talking shit, and went through every single channel in chronological order just to fully understand the context of all of the messages. So when they claim things are taken out of context, to the best of my knowledge, they're not. When I say something, I've actually read all of those messages in order. I know what they were talking about, who was involved. I have extensive notes now. Yeah, it took weeks to go through all of this stuff. It was just like a vast volume of information that just got dumped on the internet, basically. I've obviously written quite a few Twitter threads since then, kind of going through different topics like, you know, how they're involved with journalists and politicians, and some of the crazy accusations that they've been making in private, and, you know, things like that. So, there's still a vast amount of material that I haven't even written up yet. So as and when I have time, hopefully will be more Twitter threads coming. Apologies to Hart in advance for that.
That felt really, really sincere. I think that it's quite interesting how the denial of these secrets were distributed. And I think that the distributed denial of their secrets is an interesting place to discover more. So how did somebody get access to their secret log files? Because, you know, like, nobody can access my email to the best of my knowledge. How did this happen?
Well, Hart claimed that they were hacked. But to the best of my knowledge, what actually happened is that they used to use a chat service called Slack, which is generally hosted on Slack's own server. Therefore, it's pretty secure if you set it up right. Basically, they hit an issue very early on where there's only a certain number of messages that it will store in the free version. And then you have to start paying for a pro license. And I can't remember how much a pro license is, but it's a fairly small amount of money per user per month. So originally, Narice Bernard was, the founder of Hart was footing the bill for this himself, apparently. And then there were some suggestions that maybe members could chip in and pay their own part of the fee. But it seems that fell through and no one was actually willing to pay to keep using Slack. There was also a suggestion from their IT guy at one point that Slack might somehow start censoring their private messages, which sounds like absolute nonsense. As far as I know, Slack don't spy on your messages when you're in these groups. You know, the idea that they would somehow, you know, part of big tech and some kind of sinister conspiracy would start disappearing their messages and they'd have no record of this for when Nuremberg 2.0 came around. So basically, they decided to switch to another service called Rocket Chat. And Rocket Chat, they could install on their own web server and run as a service themselves, which sounds great, except that when they did this, they forgot to secure it properly. So as soon as somebody stumbled across the page for their Rocket Chat server on their website, they could create an account and join the server without anyone noticing, apparently, and then just sat there basically exporting all of the chat files every day to keep a record of what everyone was saying on there.
So whoever it was hacked Rocket Chat in exactly the same way as everybody here hacked Twitter. You went to the registration form and filled in the form.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic because when Hart first started up, a lot of the senior members were actually warning about, you know, how cybersecurity might be an issue and people would be keen to see what they were saying. And so that it'd be private and they should be really careful and make sure no one joined the group unless they personally knew them. And they had to like keep an eye out for people trying to sneak in and so on. And then a few months later, apparently someone just walked in through the front door and took all of their chat logs.
So Slack is £5.75 per person per month. They should have done a fundraiser for that.
Yeah.
So what are your favorite highlights in the logs? I say favorite, I don't know if that's exactly the right word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most amusing, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of really useful information that came out of it about their connections with other groups, with journalists, with politicians. There's also like a vast amount of information in there about exactly how they developed this idea that the COVID vaccines had somehow actually caused the huge spike in cases that we had over the winter of 2020 to 21. Apparently, it wasn't the Kent variant, according to them. It was the COVID vaccines that somehow caused the COVID outbreak. There's just all kinds of craziness in there as well about, you know, people seriously discussing whether the COVID vaccines make you magnetic. People posting stories about, that they might interact with 5G signals and stuff like that. But, you know, stuff about mind control, it gets pretty wild at times. The vaccine stuff, magnetism, they actually stuck magnets to one of their members, Tony Hinton's arm in a pub after a protest march in London. Sadly, I haven't seen the video of this. Apparently, there was a video posted on the chat group, but I haven't had access to that. Apparently there's a video somewhere of them sticking magnets to Tony Hinton's arm. Which is why we somehow sometimes jokingly refer to him now as Magneto. So that was one of the like, kind of funnier episodes, I guess.
Can I just ask, like, did you say all of the people in this chat room were professionals?
A good number.
Most of them, yeah. It's kind of a mix. A lot of them are retired, though, and obviously have had too much time on their hands.
But it's not like a Telegram channel of a bunch of people. It's like actual.
No, this is actual members of Heart. All of them are public members. They have a lot of members. They're like monsters. They keep in the basement and don't let out in public. They've never publicly admitted, I don't think, that Anna Rayner is their co-founder. Although I think the Together website actually now lists her as that, ironically.
Yeah, I was just asking that because like the topics you were just saying, it just sounds like a random conspiracy theorist Telegram channel that I come across now.
It very much is. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there about the WEF, the WHO, Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates. A lot of them seem to believe in a lot of pretty wild conspiracy theories. And then, you know, the stuff about the COVID vaccines, some of it's just absolutely crazy. They're sharing videos asking if the COVID vaccine is a bioweapon and accusing people of crimes against humanity. You've got Anna de Busseret, who's
That lawyer.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing with her about, was she even really in the army? Because like LinkedIn says like 6 months and she says like 10 years.
Yeah, it's funny. She self-identifies as a trained assassin on the basis that she apparently went on a training course at Sandhurst, and that's where Colonel Gaddafi went, apparently. As far as we know, I think she was actually in the Territorial Army, not the actual Army. I could be wrong about that, but she claims to have been in the Army. She's now a lawyer. I don't think she's doing anything actually legal at the moment.
She hasn't tweeted in like 8 months.
So she left Twitter, but she's still on Telegram. She was complaining on Twitter that people were taking the piss out of her, which, given that most of her posts were just like randomly posting bits of British legal documents and excerpts from the Bible, is perhaps not surprising. She seems to have had a little bit of a meltdown and then left Twitter. But she's still posting on Telegram, and she's still going on about Nuremberg trials and war crimes and, warning that nurses could get hung for their involvement in the COVID vaccine program. She's spoken at events alongside Kate Shemarani and other people who've also talked about hanging people involved in the vaccine program. There's some pretty nasty people involved here.
I find that whenever you get really deep into reading this stuff, and I can remember, whenever I was given the material, I can remember reading it all, and it's like, but you spend so long in it. Like, does it affect your state of mind to spend, all your spare time for weeks and weeks and weeks deep in this? Do you have some friends or family who are trying to say, John, let's just go play pool, let's go for a walk, let's play a video game, let's do whatever you do that isn't this? How does it affect you sort of socially and mentally to spend all this time going through all this hot garbage?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it. I mean, there's a lot of really crazy stuff in there. There's a lot of really dark stuff in there. Talking about like mental health, there's a lot of people in there who are clearly suffering some kind of mental health issue. And, the other members of the group aren't helping them. They're actually egging them on and encouraging them in these kind of paranoid conspiracy theories. You've got people like Michael Yeadon, who's openly talking about having depression and, thinking about how his life is going to end soon, and having paranoid ideas that when he comes back into the country, that he's going to be given lots of false positive PCR tests that keep him locked up in his own home. He eventually went off to Florida to live there. Some of the stuff that he's coming out with, he has this idea that there's this vast conspiracy going on to depopulate the Earth. And the COVID vaccines are somehow going to be programmed to kill billions of people as they get booster shots. It kind of feels like a lot of these people have gone down a variety of different rabbit holes. And, as for some of the things they were talking about have clearly not come to pass, or it's become obvious that what they were saying in the past isn't true. And, some of them are really struggling to deal with that, or they're just kind of doubling down on the stuff that they've always believed and just kind of ignoring all of the evidence to the contrary, or claiming there's some kind of vast conspiracy or cover up. Some of the things they say are just crazy and bizarre. When Was it Captain Tom died? You know, it was a lot of stuff in the news about that, obviously. And they immediately started talking about whether or not he'd been vaccinated for COVID. And one of them had this idea that she'd read somewhere in the newspaper that he had been vaccinated and then couldn't find any mention of it online, and immediately started coming up with this conspiracy story that not only the newspapers, but also like the internet search sites and the internet archives had somehow all got together and decided to scrub all of the information about how he'd been vaccinated. And of course, he hadn't been vaccinated. He was, you know, he was on holiday in Bahamas or something when the vaccine rollout started. And then when he came back, he caught pneumonia and was in hospital, and they couldn't give it to him. So yeah, it's, you know, some of the stuff they come out with is just really bizarre.
What you've described there, where somebody thinks they remember something, but it's not quite the case. Is that this is a question for Brent? Is that how the Mandela effect happens, effectively?
Essentially, yeah. It's just remembering it wrong.
Yeah, remember it wrong. Instead of oh, I had a brain fart, it's a parallel universe time.
We should also throw in here with Yeadon that he has really, really, really gone down the rabbit hole now. He said in a recent interview that viruses don't exist. You know, I mean, he's gone down that one.
Yeah, he's involved with a group of you know, a group who are trying to challenge virologists to prove that viruses exist and cause disease. Yeah, there's just kinds of all kinds of things that he's been involved with. You know, he talks about having watched YouTube videos by a 9/11 truther, and you know, how this somehow woke him up to you know, these vast overarching conspiracies that are going on. And yeah, it just seems like he's got to a point now where he'll believe pretty much anything. It's kind of sad, really. I mean, you know, I've spoken to people who used to work with him. And, you know, even a year ago, they were saying they didn't recognize him anymore. And obviously, he's gone even further downhill since then. So, yeah, it's kind of a sad end to his career, really, but he's ended up as this kind of notorious disinformation conspiracy theorist. And, you know, it's kind of eliminated any good work that he might have done earlier in his career, unfortunately.
Because one of those people is called Hasselman on Twitter, and I talked to him quite a bit, yeah.
We will add a link to Hasselman in the show notes. Another thing we're going to add a link to in the show notes is covidstars.wordpress.com, and in there is an article called "Was Michael Yeadon Hacked?" Brent, do you want to speak, and then we'll talk about Michael Yeadon not being hacked.
From your reading of all of these messages, can you like make a distinction between people like who really believe it and people who are just grifting? Like, say, Michael Yeadon really believing it and then maybe other people just taking advantage of these people that believe it?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, certainly on the face of it, a lot of them, I mean, most of them seem to believe what they're saying. And again, it's, you know, it's like they've got this idea that they've somehow spotted things that the vast majority of experts in the world, who many of whom are far better qualified than they are, have somehow not spotted this stuff happening, and that they're the only people who've discovered the truth, and now they're trying to get it out there. You know, like I say, a lot of it is very obviously nonsense. It's quite easy to disprove, but, you know, they have a tendency to just block anyone that disagrees with them, and they live in this little echo chamber. I mean, you can see how over time, you know, some of the people who maybe started out just going on about false positives and lockdowns and stuff become more and more engaged with the kind of, you know, anti-vaccine content and conspiracy theories. And you've got people like Norman Fenton, for example, who, you know, he was a fairly respected academic before the pandemic. And then he started going on about false positives and saying some things that were quite blatantly not true, because he didn't understand the data that he was looking at. And now he's like tweeting saying, hey, my flight home from Israel holiday has been cancelled. It's all a plot by the WEF to stop people traveling, and, you know, co-authoring papers about, you know, supposed discrepancies with ONS data, suggesting that the ONS is lying about how it categorizes people's vaccine status. And he's co-authoring those papers with people who openly say that they're anti-vaxxers. And, you know, it's quite an extraordinary, you know, fall from grace, I guess, for some of these people, that they, you know, they've started off relatively normal and then just gradually gone downhill during the pandemic. And I mean, it's ironic. A lot of these people go on a lot about the mental health impact of lockdown and the pandemic, And they don't seem to notice that they seem to be the people who are suffering the most from it, because not only are they dealing with all that stuff, we're also dealing with this, you know, idea that there's this vast conspiracy and they're the only people who've noticed it. And, you know, a lot of them really seem to be going downhill because of that.
Yeah, I should also mention before we move on that that is a preprint, not a paper, the Norman Fencer one. I will be covering it at a later date, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, sorry. It's not been published. I can't imagine it would ever be published because it makes some pretty wild claims and they have absolutely no evidence to back it up. Basically, what happened is that the ONS released some data. They thought it looked a bit odd. They basically ignored what everybody told them was the explanation for this and instead decided that the ONS was lying about the data. They then essentially got Joel Smalley to make up their own set of data.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's one of Joel Smalley's notorious false baselines where basically he's decided people die at the same rate throughout the year. There's, like, you know, people don't die more often in the winter. It's just a flat baseline through the entire year. And any deaths above that level are therefore excess deaths and must be caused by the vaccine. And that's basically, there's an entire section of the preprint paper which is basically saying, hey, you know, when the vaccine rollout started, there was this huge spike in excess deaths, and we're going to say that that was caused by the vaccine and that the ONS was miscategorizing people as not being vaccinated for the first 2 weeks they were vaccinated, even though the ONS data contains a specific category for people within the first 3 weeks after vaccination. They basically just assume that that's nonsense and the ONS were miscategorizing people. That spike in deaths does not exist. The only reason it exists in their paper is because Joel Smalley assumed that people died at the same rate in winter as they do in the middle of summer, which is not true. So he basically created a bunch of excess deaths which don't even exist and then assigned them all to the small percentage of people who hadn't yet been vaccinated in some of the older age groups, which inevitably creates a huge spike in death rates in that group. But it doesn't exist. There's no evidence at all to support it. If you look at the raw data, there's like, you know, there's no spike in, you know, in deaths in those age groups to go with that. He's literally just moved deaths from one group to another. And as that groups get smaller and smaller, there's obviously a huge spike in the number of deaths in that group. It's very obviously wrong. And the fact that, you know, it's not just Norman Fenton, there's some of his colleagues as well at Queen Mary University London. We're also co-authors on that paper, and they've all stood behind it and promoted it, even when people have pointed out the numerous errors. I think the funniest one is at one point they claim that the ONS data is faulty because the population numbers don't add up. Basically, the total population goes up for the first 11 weeks of the year, and then it starts going down. The reason that happens is because the data set that the ONS is using is based on the 2011 census, and it only includes people aged over 10. So for the first 11 weeks of the year, as people turn 10, they get added to the total population. Once you get 10 years past the census, there's nobody else to be added, so that stops happening, and then the population starts going down again as people die, as you would expect. And, you know, people have pointed this out to them. It's a pretty obvious explanation. That's still in their preprint. They haven't removed that section from the preprint, even though it's just obvious nonsense. And it's just, again, because they haven't taken the time to understand the data that they're citing.
I really wish that we had asked Dr. Oliver this last time. That preprint, right, let's assume that while it hasn't been successfully peer-reviewed, somebody has had a look at it and went, this is bollocks, mate. Is there any way of telling that that has happened? Or is it just sit in preprint until it's through or not through and just sits in preprint forever?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've got a feeling they have said at some point that it had been submitted somewhere, but obviously wherever they submitted hasn't published it. And, you know, it could be anywhere. I mean, there's a lot of journals out there of varying quality levels, so who knows?
The whole thing is just a mess. So you talked about backbench Conservative MPs, although as they seem to be now, frontbench Conservative MPs. Well, no, that's new, not the case yet.
Some of them are, sadly, yeah. So, for example, Steve Baker. So Steve Baker is working at the Northern Ireland office now. Good luck, Northern Ireland. We're really sorry about that. But, yeah, he was one of the leaders of the COVID recovery group of Tory backbench MPs, and they were in contact with Hart right from the beginning, before the group even publicly launched. They gave Hart advice. So, for example, we know that they advised Hart to go away and, you know, try and get create a story that they could get behind, and to do these kind of weekly bulletins that they would send to all of the MPs. Hart went away and did that. That kind of culminated in the notorious March bulletin, where Hart suggested, but just asking questions, that the COVID vaccines were actually causing people to die from COVID. There was a huge uproar about that. And again, some MPs actually came out and defended them over that bulletin.
Yeah, and there's also, it's not Hart's collapse or global, but there's the all-party parliamentary group on pandemic response and recovery.
Yes.
Which Klaus Grubel acts as the group's secretariat. So I assume that I'm not quite sure what that means, if they organise it, they take them in. I'm not quite sure what secretariat does.
It's kind of a weird one, because Collateral Global are listed on the interests form for the group as funding the APPG and also, like you say, providing the secretariat. But when they release minutes of their meetings, the secretariat are listed as Gemma Moran and Rachel Marcus, who are both members of Hart. They're not listed anywhere on Collateral Global's website, so we don't know if they're also secretly members of Collateral Global, or if records are actually incorrect and Collateral Global have basically outsourced the running of this all-party parliamentary group to a pair of, you know, people from Hart. The interesting thing is that in chat logs, both of these people come out apparently supporting Michael Yeadon's conspiracy theories about depopulating the Earth. So we seem to have a pair of anti-vax conspiracy theorists who are not only providing the secretariat services for this all-party parliamentary group on pandemics, but are also basically inviting all of their friends and colleagues to come and speak to MPs. So when you go through their meetings, I think something like 80 or 90% of the people who speak at their meetings are our Hart members, Collateral Global members, or friends of them. I think at one point they even got Claire Craig's brother to speak to the group, which is really scraping the bottom of the barrel. I think he's like a constitutional lawyer or something. But obviously, when they introduce these people, they don't say, "Hey, this is a Hart member, this is a Hart member, and this is a Hart member too." They introduce them based on, you know, which university they work at, or, you know, what their background is or whatever. So I have no idea if the MPs who are sitting on this group actually have any idea that they're basically just being presented with a bunch of friends and family of the people who run it. Publicly, they say, "Hey, we're here to listen to both sides." But what actually happens is for a bunch of people who agree with each other speak to the MPs and give them all the same story. And then every month, their minutes say, everyone agreed that, and then whatever the subject was, like, you know, lockdowns are bad, or, you know, masks don't work, or, you know, whatever. If you look at the minutes, a lot of the people who are members of this group don't actually show up to any of the meetings. So I don't know if, you know, how much of this information is getting through to them. But, you know, you do have several MPs who show up each week and basically get fed a bunch of information by one side of the story. And a lot of what they're being told is at best misleading. And, you know, we have no idea how much impact that's having. But, you know, you've got Esther McVeigh, who's a, you know, fairly prominent MP who's chairing this group. You know, she's basically just getting fed the same line every month by, you know, the people who are running this group for her.
We've talked a little bit about how Hart and Cloud Global have some influence operations with MPs, and there are MPs who are also influencing Hart, and I'm pretty sure Andrew Rosendale's pretty prominent amongst that. Do we have any evidence that there have been questions asked in Parliament? I was going to say a policy's created, but they're all backbenchers, so.
Yes. So not specifically Hart, but we do know that Michael Yeadon was in contact with a member of the House of Lords. Lord Attlee. And Michael Yeadon apparently had been talking to him throughout 2020 and got him to table some questions in the House of Lords for him, targeted at Lord Bethel, who was involved with the testing system at the time. By the sort of early 2021, by the time Hart got up and running, Yeadon admitted that Attlee no longer replies to me. He thought this was odd, that Attlee had basically decided that all of the stuff Yeadon had been talking about, false positive pseudo-epidemics, wasn't true. Obviously, by January 2021, we were in the middle of a very obviously real COVID wave, and the idea that this was somehow all false positives was clearly nonsense. I think Attlee had kind of cottoned onto this somewhat belatedly and basically stopped talking to Yeadon because of it. But we do know that he had tabled several questions in the House of Lords, and I've actually identified the questions that he'd asked because of his contact with Michael Yeadon. We also, we don't know for sure, but we do know that Hart were talking about targeting, is it Christopher Chope, who's the guy behind the vaccine damage bill. He also now has his own all-party parliamentary group on COVID vaccine damage, which just started up over the summer. They haven't published any information about the group yet. They haven't got any like members list or minutes from the meetings or anything yet. I have actually emailed him to ask him for that because legally they have to provide that information on request. I haven't heard anything back yet, but I will let you know if I do. But yeah, again, it's another group that started up within Parliament, which may or may not have links to one or more of these groups. It's just kind of concerning that this is kind of growing over time, if anything. And obviously, with the other thing is with the COVID, the official UK COVID-19 inquiry coming up, we know that a lot of these groups have been trying to influence that. There's been letter writing campaigns with their followers. There's been direct submissions from the groups themselves. Some of these submissions are actually quoted in the terms of reference notes. So like when they did a consultation on the terms of reference for the inquiry, they released a document talking about some of the submissions that they'd had, and some of those submissions we can link back to groups like Hart and Us for Them and Together and so on. So I don't know if any of that has actually had an influence on the inquiry yet, but we know that some of these groups are actually trying to get themselves, I've forgotten what the technical term is, but basically they want to be involved with the inquiry and have special access to it. So again, it's something that they need to be very careful about, is just kind of understanding who it is that's submitting this information to them and being able to evaluate whether or not it can actually be trusted. Because obviously, the whole point of the inquiry is to learn what went wrong and what we can do better next time there's a pandemic, because sooner or later, this is going to happen again. It might be 10 years, it might be 100 years, but one day it's going to happen again. We don't want the information that's come out of this pandemic to end up getting skewed by misinformation that's coming through from these groups. We need to listen to both sides, but at the same time, we need to make sure that the information they're giving is actually accurate. And certainly some of these groups are presenting information that's just blatantly not true.
With a lot of the sort of like US anti-vaxxers, like your Joe McCullers, your Del Bigtrees, like they are really like raking in the money, like they're multi-millionaires. RFK Jr. especially with $50 million. Do we see that with like Hart and these other groups? Are they like getting paid? Are they driving Rolls Royces and Bentleys or whatever?
If we believe them, then no. In fact, some of them complain about how much money they've been losing, because obviously a lot of them are now out of work. Even long before Hart, Claire Craig's LinkedIn said that she was working full-time on the false positive problem. The main problem for her is that there weren't a lot of false positives. She basically has been out of work throughout the pandemic, which, given she's a pathologist, is kind of worrying. You'd think if she was any good at the job, she probably could have found a job somewhere.
She has also lost her license.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, that might explain it partly as well.
Yeah, that's right. She has, we don't know why. It could be she hasn't paid upkeep, or it could have been, gross incompetence. We don't technically know, but she doesn't have it. We can say that.
Yeah, we also know, for example, that Michael Yeadon lost a lot of his paid consultancy work. Although, as I say, he's now moved to Florida, and obviously it's a lot easier over there to kind of cash in on these things. So we don't know whether or not he's making any money from it now, but certainly, if anything, he seems to have lost money during the pandemic because of the things he was saying. And a lot of these people are retired or out of work anyway. And You know, Harp themselves, they set up a crowdfunding link on their page when they first launched, and they got some funny comments about it and took it off again. I think they only ever raised about £1,000, which again is one of the reasons why they couldn't afford a Slack license.
Wow. Yo!
Shots fired, shots fired.
which is obviously unlucky for them.
Yeah. To be honest, I can't speak for any of us, but I know that I've spent money and not gained any money back. I'm not looking for anything now. There's no collection pot or anything to plug. But I mean, it seems to me perfectly normal that people, to be fair to Hart, good grief, that felt strange to say. It seems perfectly normal that people would make sacrifices to persuade other people of the things that they believe or care about. It was one of the things that surprised me whenever I started reading these things, and I think, John, you said the same. I was expecting to see people who were obviously grifting, and that wasn't what I seen. You know, maybe with RFK and Big Tree raking in the dough, maybe it's different, I don't know. But these guys do seem to be genuine, just, well, for the most part, just badly, badly, badly mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously a lot of the other kind of peripheral groups certainly are trying to raise money now. So we know, for example, again, Tess Laurie is involved with another group called the World Council for Health, which sounds very grandiose, but it's actually basically a bunch of like homeopaths, naturopaths, alternative medicine practitioners, anti-vaxxers. They hold what they call a Better Way conference, which they charge for. And again, they had a lot of kind of very well-known anti-vaxxers from the US, including Del Bigtree and others, who came to their conference in Bath. They've got another conference in Vienna coming up. That's not a plug, by the way.
I actually do have access to their first day of their conference. They failed to lock people out after the 15-minute intro. So
I think they've actually started releasing the videos for free now. So having charged people to watch them online, they're now basically giving them all away for free a few weeks later, which I guess might make people less likely to pay next time, hopefully. But again, somebody's making money off this. You know, they were charging people for stalls at the event as well. And we know, for example, I think it was a Safer to Wait campaign, which Val Fraser, another Harp member, is involved with. She was talking about how they'd given her a special discounted friends rate, essentially, for having a stall at the conference. And then we're still trying to raise money to print leaflets and stuff to give out there. So, you know, they're all trying to find ways to make money out of it now. The Together Declaration, for example, now have their own membership scheme and are selling vastly overpriced tote bags with their logo on them. You know, and a lot of these groups have also been involved in crowdfunding campaigns for various dubious legal cases. You know, the Child COVID Vaccine Advisory Council were involved in trying to stop children under 12 getting vaccinated.
It's very important that the Child COVID Vaccine Advisory Council, is that correct?
Yes.
That sounds super official. That's just some cranks in a shed.
Yeah, it's basically Hart wearing a false moustache and a pair of glasses. If you look at their open letters, pretty much everybody on there is a member of Hart, or one of their friends, or in one case, I think Ross Jones's husband is on there or something as a signatory. So yeah, there's a lot of these groups that have like a vast amount of overlap in their membership, and some of them are obviously now trying to cash in on it. You know, they've basically spent the last year or two creating uncertainty and spreading false information, whether they know it's false or not. You know, some of them are now trying to make money out of that going forwards. So again, that's something we need to keep an eye on. There's a lot of weird crowdfunding campaigns going on. Like, you know, I think John Bow is trying to, he's like trying to raise £1 million or something for some like COVID vaccine injury group. I think at the last time I checked, he'd raised about 10,000. He's pretty much killed his career in the process.
Yeah. His thing is actually up and running, but someone actually found it. And basically the person on the other end of the line wasn't medically qualified or anything. And no one at the group was medically qualified. So they asked about a vaccine injury and they were just like, look it up on the internet, mate. That was what the response they got.
Yeah, do your own research.
It's actually a really important point. Like, I feel very sorry for people who, you know, have taken a vaccine, and nothing like the numbers that these people think there is, but there are people who have taken these vaccines and had a difficult time and need help. And that's a real thing. No, not in anything like the numbers that these guys talk about. Absolutely not. And not with bloody magnetism or anything like that. That's stupid. But somebody who's really suffered is going to end up phoning up John Bow, his stupid charity that's literally called COVID, and get passed on to somebody who knows nothing about anything and cannot help them. And that genuinely breaks my heart.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is denying that a small number of people have died or suffered serious injury as a result of being given COVID vaccines, but they are very small numbers given that literally billions of people around the world have been given these vaccines. Now, the idea that there's this huge tidal wave of people dying that we somehow just haven't noticed is, yeah, it's crazy.
I think it's very important that we do recognize that those people do exist, even though they are, thankfully, they're really not many.
Yeah. The latest figures have, you know, about 30 deaths, which, you know, it's on the death certificate, it's autopsies, it's proven.
Yeah.
So they exist, but we have to be honest about how rare they are.
And in every age group, it's much safer to be vaccinated. Yeah. Even with those chances, it's the numbers add up in favour of vaccination.
Yeah, I mean, even when you look at children, it's like, you know, there's well over 100 now children and teenagers have died during the pandemic because of COVID, directly because of COVID.
It wasn't safer to wait for COVID.
No. And the irony is that, you know, by doing all of these things that, you know, groups like Heart and As For Them and so on were campaigning for, to send kids back to school without any kind of protection, it's resulted in kids catching more dangerous variants of COVID than we have circulating at the moment. I mean, no one's saying that Omicron is completely safe, but it's obviously a lot less dangerous than, say, the Delta variant that was going around last year. So, you know, by getting all of these kids infected earlier in the pandemic, they've probably ended up, you know, with more harm being caused than, you know, we've done various things to keep them safe for longer.
But I think it's very difficult to say that. If something, you know, for somebody who's immune naive, I think it's very difficult to say that Omicron's safer than F, because obviously so few people are now between vaccination and infection.
Yeah, I've seen varying things about that. I mean, I remember one study I saw said that it was kind of comparable almost to the original strain of COVID, and then like the Alpha and Delta variants were more dangerous. But like you say, it's quite hard to tell. You know, there's a lot of different factors you have to unpick about how many people had already had COVID and maybe not known about it, and how many people had been vaccinated and whatever else. And, you know, obviously treatments have improved over time as well. So, you know, there's a lot of confounding factors that are quite hard to unpick. But generally, it does seem that Omicron is maybe a little bit less serious than some of the variants that we had going around last year. As far as I know, like I say, I'm not a medical professional, but from what I've read, that seems to be the case.
Have any of you seen Iowa Cummins' film whenever it was released for free? And by the way, thank you very much to everybody who funded his film and then was charged for it after funding the creation of it. I saw it for free because he put it up on Vimeo for free for a couple of weeks. So he really, really respected your money an awful lot by doing that. Anyway, did anybody see this film that I saw for free because he put it up on Vimeo for free despite charging people for it?
I didn't watch it, no. But again, Iva Cummins is a good example of somebody who has made a vast amount of money during the pandemic by saying things which are just obviously nonsense. I've forgotten what the figures were, but he was bringing in like tens of thousands of pounds a month. And I think he's even like bought property and stuff since then because of like all the money he's been bringing in. So when it comes to the European side of things, I think he's probably come out of the pandemic as well off as anyone has in terms of the misinformation brigade.
Well, the CGI for that film is some of the worst CGI I have ever seen in my life. It is proper, proper terrible looking. John, thanks very much for taking us through those crazy, crazy logs. And I hope that you managed to recover from the dirty, dirty work. I think we're all grateful for your time. And it's sort of it's a nice feeling to almost be on the conspiracist side of things tonight.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it does feel very much like that meme of just like all of the interconnecting strands, and just for the weird thing is actually it's true in this case. There are all of these interconnected groups with overlapping membership that are all kind of secretly, you know, talking in the background about how they're, you know, one of the things I remember was one of their members was saying, hey, we should amplify this other groups that, you know, we share members with. We should amplify their message, because then it looks like two independent groups agreeing with each other. And they weren't two independent groups. They were two groups that were coordinating behind the scenes to spread this message. And, you know, there were multiple people who were in both groups. And yeah, this stuff happens all the time. It's just amazing that we've actually got this resource where there's all these tens of thousands of messages from, you know, 7 or 8 months worth of, you know, of chat logs that we actually see what's been going on behind the scenes with some of these groups.
Yeah, I found that very interesting that people who believe in conspiracies or conspiracy theories are very willing to commit conspiracies.
Yeah. So what did you think, Brent, in particular, from a, like, I thought that actually the most interesting thing you said, that maybe anybody said, was what you said right at the end, where you said that it was quite interesting that people who believe in conspiracies are willing to take part in conspiracies. Mm. Is that something that you've seen in other conspiracies?
Yeah, I have seemed to notice that. I find a lot of conspiracists are willing to lie to get their point across. They're willing to make like memes or whatever that convinces you of what they believe. You know, it's something I didn't like back in the day when I did used to see certain memes. Like, if we can go back to the whole crisis actor pictures and stuff, and I thought, why are you guys lying? Like, it's quite obviously two different women.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not the same lady. What are you talking about? Very quick to do it. And I don't know if it comes from just, like, they believe it so much that they just want you to believe it. So if they can just tell you something that shocks you into believing it, then at least you'll be on their side.
I think that it is true, yeah. It's sort of like, basically, I'll take you through one, because with the Sandy Hook stuff, one Sandy Hook truther just said, like, invented a document. It was completely wrong. There was no classification number, even though it said it was classified. It mentioned stuff about vaccines in there because it was a CDC document template they used, but it's just like they believed it so much that they want you to believe it. So they will just make up a piece of evidence.
That's what it seems to be like, same with the people that were in the Heart Group, because I found that very interesting. I wanted to hear his point of view. Like, are they believers or grifters?
Yeah.
You know, and by him saying, like, no, I think they really all do believe this stuff, then you can start to see why maybe they, like, pushed to try and get other people to believe what they believe, you know?
I mean, that was the thing, actually. So I had a similar experience to him where, you know, somebody supplied, some bigger kids sent me the Heart stuff. And then I had a similar experience to him where you're looking through this stuff and thinking, oh, right, these guys actually think this is real. And they seem to, for the most part, believe the things that they say. Now, there's definitely in that there's some tactics that feel underhand or that feel like their tactics that they themselves should disagree with based on the other things that they say. So the stuff around all the nudge stuff and the TikTok video aimed at teenagers, you know, that feels inconsistent. But everyone's inconsistent to some extent, right? I mean, I wouldn't like anybody to go over all the details of my life with a fine-tooth comb and look for hypocrisy, because they'll find some, because of course they will. I guess all that's left then is to thank you, dear listener, for listening to Lads on Tour. And if this is your first time and you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can subscribe to the Lads on Tour podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.